All right. We actually have a topic for today, right? Something we want to talk about, something I think you might be more excited about than I am. No, I'm just kidding. I'm also really excited. Go ahead and explain what the plan is for today and for this podcast episode.
Okay, so a couple of days ago, I was looking at my second brain and I got this boost of motivation on it. I just saw it and I was like, I want to see other people. So I texted you, Arna, because I know you also have a second brain and it's in Obsidian and you have this whole workflow you've talked about, but not you haven't gone deep into it. So I wanted to see how that works for you and for you to explain it to me for a bit. So we're gonna talk about what is the second brain, what do we consider a second brain, and why we use it. And I'd like for you to show me how yours is, how it is set up and everything. So yeah,
sounds good. I mean, maybe we can start off with what you just said, maybe going a bit into like what a second brain is. I don't think we have to like drag it out too much because it's something you can read about and watch a ton of YouTube videos about. But basically, second brain, the term itself comes from Tiago Forte, right? He's a productivity master or whatever you want to call him, but he's become really popular in the productivity scene for his specific concept of the second brain. And the whole idea, in the most simplest way I can describe it, is just developing a digital extension of your own brain. And that's what's called the second brain, to essentially combine the qualities and strengths of our actual first brains, our first minds, which are really good at generating ideas and creating things, but which have certain downsides in regards to, for example, storing information or organizing information or reconnecting information from the past. So the whole idea is to use the first brain, the actual brain you have in your head, to generate ideas and to do the things that your first brain is really good at, and then to leverage the power of technology to extend that first brain with a second digital brain to get the best of both worlds and become just like a productivity master mind and develop your own system, which allows you to capture ideas and regenerate and recreate and just build this collection of information and knowledge, which becomes your asset of information and knowledge for you to create new things in the future. Do you think that's a reasonable explanation?
Yeah, that's a perfect explanation. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so... okay. And maybe a bit about the backstory, how we both got into this. I'm not even sure when it started, but I think it goes back quite a while. I think both of us, we maybe didn't even start off with this concept of the second brain, but we got into building digital systems pretty early on, trying to build databases in Notion and setting up these wonderful environments, digital environments for us to capture things and put cool emojis everywhere to make it look fancy. But then I think we both, probably a couple of years ago actually, got in touch with this concept of the second brain. And I think both of us liked the idea of it, but I think both of us didn't really know what it was or how to do it. And I think both of us had a long process of trial and error, trying to figure certain parts and concepts of it out. And then at the end, but also just developing our own versions of it that work for us. So yeah, I think in this one, and I'm also really curious about how you process information digitally. Maybe in this call, we can just, you know, explain our systems in general. And then also I'm going to try to screen share my screen and we'll hop into my second brain. And if that works, hopefully I can give you like a more in-depth view and look into my second brain.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, what you were saying, that it was a whole process, I feel like for me it's still a process that I'm going through, and that's why I also want to see yours. Obviously, a second brain is your own, you can't copy from anyone, because what works for you doesn't work for other people. And I know that because that's happened to me. I've tried copying from like other people's templates and it just doesn't work. You have to adapt it yourself. But by seeing what other people do, you can take aspects from other people and implement them and be like, oh, this actually works for me. I'm gonna keep it. So yeah, I just want you to show me around around your second brain. So yeah. Actually, I wanted to point out that you were the one that introduced me to the actual name of what it was, because
oh really,
and you didn't even explain it to me. I just saw that you had a thing called Second Brain as a project in your Things 3, I think it was, or I think it was there, or maybe it was in your Notion, I don't even know, but I saw that and I remember and I wrote it down because I asked you what it was and you said that it was something you were looking into. We didn't really explain what it was. So I wrote it down and I started looking at it myself because it just looked so interesting. Just the name, Second Brain. So yeah, just to point that out, that it was you.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it is a cool name. And to be honest, for me, as someone who's a big fan of technology, I really dig this concept of combining my human brain, my first brain, with this digital version of a brain, which I call the second brain. I really love that idea. So I also really like the name. Okay, maybe to get this started, I would say I actually give you a general explanation first of how I think about my second brain and the parts of it. And then we can jump into my Obsidian if you want, which is, to be fair, only one part of my second brain, but it's sort of the end point of everything. But yeah. Okay, so in general, I really, and this has also been a process, and of course my second brain isn't finished or done by any means, but I feel it's developed into a system that I can work with pretty well on a daily basis. So that's just the current status, just to set that as a disclaimer. But in general, I really try to figure out, okay, what even is a second brain and how do I best think about it to make it a system that is fully coherent, and that's not just, you know, one aspect of it, but that sort of covers the entire ground. For me, I really try to think about my second brain as the system that manages the flow of information that I receive digitally, but also in the real world. So fundamentally, for me, it's really about developing a system to manage information flow. And to manage information flow in a way where, in the end, I get some kind of benefit, either by having useful information captured or by being able to create something from that flow of information or something like that. But fundamentally, for me, it's really about flow of information. So that's like the basic thing, what the second brain even is for and what the main purpose is. And then if you think about it this way, and we're not talking about any applications yet, we're not talking about Obsidian versus Notion or anything like that, we're just talking about the basic concepts. A flow of information and managing that flow is the whole point of the second brain. Then the next step for me was to figure out, okay, what does that flow of information consist of and how do I want to manage that flow? And for me, it was really about identifying, okay, where do I receive information as the first component? So where does information even come from? Where is the origin of this flow of information? And then I really just tried to figure out, and I sent you a screenshot of this, trying to figure out what are the specific origins of flow of information. And for me, and maybe there's more, but I just identified a couple of ones, right? Some things are pretty obvious. So if I'm online, if I watch YouTube videos, that could be a flow of information, right? New information coming into my system and into my world. It could be reading a book. It could be listening to a podcast. But it could also be things which might seem a bit more abstract at first, like this conversation, for example. You might tell me something that I haven't heard about before, and that's a new piece of information that enters my world. So this is also a potential source of information. And if you think about it this way, there's a ton more. So for example, if I listen to a lecture at uni, that's an origin of information. Or if I have a phone call or something like this, or even if I just generate a new idea by myself, if I'm on a walk and I'm thinking about, I don't know, everything, and I get a new insight, that could also be an origin of some kind of new piece of information. And if you figure out what these different pieces are, where information comes from, then that's sort of like the precondition for you to understand how to best manage those flows of information. And that brings me to the second component of my second brain, which is just these things which transport information from their origin to an endpoint, which is the last part of my entire system. So really think about it. There's information coming in. Information is being processed as a second component. And then there should be some kind of final endpoint, some end station where information is stored and being used or reoriented or reorganized in some kind of useful way. And yeah, there are pieces of software which come into play at this point, right? There are certain pieces of software, some of which we might talk about, for example, Readwise, which I think you actually like only recently introduced me to. But that's a piece of software that I use to process information. It doesn't have any other job. It's just for processing information. And then I have my central endpoint for pretty much everything. And in my case, that is Obsidian, the tool that both of us use at the moment. Yeah. And that's sort of like the general structure. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I also resonate with that because, well, you sent me the screenshot with kind of all the sources of information or things where you consume information, I guess. And then where it's like processed, for example, Readwise, and then where it ends. So I took that and I tried to do that myself in a notebook just to kind of sort my brain. So yeah, to be honest, there's so many sources of information because
yeah,
if you look at it, a call, maybe people don't think that's a source of information, but it really is. Even just conversations and even text messages, you have to,
yes,
everything gets lost so easily because there's so many inputs of information. So yeah, continue, tell me how you sort that out.
Yeah, but that's already like a really good observation. There's a ton of sources of information nowadays. And the thing you really try to avoid with the system is to lose valuable information, which happens so easily. Exactly. And if you don't even consider phone calls or text messages as a source of information, that means you're definitely not going to pay attention to capturing any of that that might be really valuable, actually. And then it's just something you put time into, something you invested something into, but didn't get anything out because it just stayed within the moment and didn't add anything to the bigger thing you're building, which you might be able to use long term. Yeah. But basically, having explained the system, you know, it's a very simple and abstract system, doesn't have anything to do with technology. And now the thing we're doing in our modern time is just we're using this general framework and we're now implementing technology in that framework to leverage the benefits of that, right? It would be super tedious if I read physical books and made physical notes in it with a marker or something, and then try to recopy all of that into a physical end notebook, which would be the equivalent to my current Obsidian workspace. That would be a ton of work. It wouldn't be worthwhile. It would just make the entire thing very inefficient. But with the power of technology, we can connect these things pretty seamlessly and just save a lot of time and make this a lot more fun and, yeah, productive. Okay. I would say if you don't have any questions so far, that I just try to share my screen. We haven't tried this before, so I hope it works. And I can just give you a general breakdown of the endpoint of my system. So very clear, just to specify it, it's the endpoint, which in my case is Obsidian. And it's the endpoint for the majority of sources of information. There are some sources of information which are stored on other endpoints. So for example, contact information, right? I don't store contact information in my Obsidian. The endpoint for that is my Apple Contacts thing, right? So there are also different endpoints of sources of information for me, but Obsidian is my primary one, and it's the one where especially ideas get captured.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. Let me try to do this, and we'll see if it works. I think this should work, actually.
Yeah, it should work. I hope I see it fine. Oh, yeah, that's totally fine, yeah.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so right now I'm in my Obsidian vault. And just to clarify, maybe you can give a bit of a background, what Obsidian is, what kind of category of apps it falls into.
Yeah. Okay. So Obsidian is, it could be considered a note-taking app, basically, but it's open source, and it's store, so it stores files locally using Markdown, which is like a language for writing, I guess. It's really easy, so that's not a problem. So the advantage of Obsidian is that because it's locally, you store your files in wherever you choose, basically. It's very safe, so that's an advantage. If you compare it with Notion, for example, because Notion, it has a whole server, and if a Notion, for example, stops working, but for some reason, like, their server is down, you can't access your files. So for me, at least, that was a big reason why I chose Obsidian and why I started, why I changed to Obsidian. Okay, sorry, I have, like...
No worries.
Mucus in my throat. I shouldn't have said that, but... Okay, I think that's fine now. Yeah, I think it's fine. So yeah, and there's also a huge thing that it's very easy to link your notes to other notes. Because of the syntax, there's a specific so two brackets where you can link it to any other note that exists or doesn't exist. You just write the name, and then you can see that in a graph with all the notes linked, which helps make connections between your own notes and make new insights, which is the whole purpose of a second brain, helping you get new ideas from what you already have. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really good explanation. I do want to caveat that Obsidian is a tool which can be extremely overwhelming at the beginning. And to be honest, I am also probably using a really small percentage of the features that Obsidian has on offer, especially because Obsidian also has a ton of community plugins which give you additional features. And I think nowadays, if you use all of the plugins, you could probably use it for everything. You could have a calendar in Obsidian, you could have anything else in Obsidian. I personally actually like the idea of keeping it somewhat simple. And for me, the main feature which is the reason why I love Obsidian so much is really this bidirectional linking feature. I think it's called bidirectional
yeah.
linking.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you think about it, when you generate new ideas in your first brain, it's often the same thing. You have knowledge from about one thing, and then you have some knowledge about something completely unrelated. And then you combine the knowledge of these two things and create some kind of new insight or a new idea from that. And so Obsidian works in a really similar way. And so I feel like it's a great tool because it does really, on a fundamental level, work similar to how we generate ideas in our first brain. Okay. Yep. But let's get specific. I think that's often something, you know, a ton of people talk about their digital systems, but often it's not super specific. So let me just try. I'm going to do my best job, hopefully, give you somewhat of an overview over how I structure my Obsidian Vault specifically. Okay. So as you can see, I'm going to skip explaining what this first page is, but I'm going to get back to that afterwards. But in general, I have this workspace, and you have individual nodes, which is something like this here. You know, this could be like a node. I can type something here, and this is a node. But then you do have some flexibility on how you structure your entire Obsidian Vault. And you do actually have folders similar to any regular folder system or file system. You can create folders in this left side, and then you can store nodes or even subfolders within those top folders. So I'm just going to go in here and go back to the top level. And as you can see, on the top level, I have a really, really simple setup. I have an inbox, and this is where all of the new nodes I create automatically land. So you can actually set this up as a feature in the settings of Obsidian, that when you create a new node, it automatically lands in a specific folder. And for me, this is the inbox folder. This just ensures that, you know, everything's super clean here, and I always have this general, really clean structure here. And then the system I have for my actual folders is a specific system that is also part of the second brain as presented by Tiago Forte, and that's the PARA method system, whatever it's called. And PARA just stands for Projects, Areas, Resources, and Archive. I'm not quite sure if it's the best idea if we try to go into the depth of that. I know that you probably know what this means, Irene. It is a bit of a system, a bit of a complicated system. And for me personally, it did take me multiple attempts trying to figure out how this works. But now that I fully understood the system, it's just an absolute no-brainer. So in general, how it's structured, this project folder is for like active projects, so things I'm currently specifically working on. Then areas is for areas of my life that I want to keep up to certain standards. So for example, my journaling notes, which I want to do on a daily basis, they have a folder within areas. And then resources is really just like my Wikipedia, my personal Wikipedia, where I store like specific pieces of information. And then the archive is really just for removing everything else that's not currently in use and doesn't fall in any of the other categories. And I think that basic concept of having an archive folder, you don't need to have the other ones, but I think having an archive folder is already really powerful to just keep things organized and clean. Okay.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I don't know if you're comfortable with it, but maybe if you could show what folders you have in the areas, or maybe not show, but at least tell me something about it, because that's something I've struggled with the areas part. Because what do you consider an area? Because okay, journaling, that's an area, but for example, your health, is that a project? Because it's something you're actively working on, but that's a project for life, so it's an area. So what do you consider, what is it for you? How do you use areas in general? So yeah,
that's a good example. I'm definitely going to go in here. And if you want, we can just also start off with the area section. So health, for example, for me would be a very clear area, but it's also a very clear resource. So a folder under resources. Yes. And the reason why that is that I separate the two pieces of information. So if I learn something about, let's say I learned something about breathing techniques and how that has positive impact on, I don't know, performance or sleep or things like that, then that would be something I might take a note on. And then that note would go into resources because it's like a Wikipedia entry, right? It's a piece of information that is not super action specific, right? It doesn't tell me, hey, do breathing exercises every day. It's just about breathing exercises and the benefits of that for health. And so that would clearly be something that would fall under resources for me. So if I go into resources, and again, I'm trying to keep this organized, but I think it should be clear. We have areas and then subfolders, and we have resources and then subfolders. So if I go into resources, for example, you will see that I do have a health folder here.
Yes.
So health is resources for me in some ways. But if I were to, for example, create an action plan for, I don't know, me doing exercises, or if I did an exercising journal, for example, where I had a note for every time I worked out explaining how it went, what things I want to improve, that would then be an area for me. Because in that case, it would be much more action oriented. And that's in general like a useful way you can think about this PARA method. So the actionability of the items in these four categories decreases from top to bottom. So project is supposed to be really action oriented. So a folder with everything related to you writing that exam or that essay for university, right? That would clearly be a project. But then if you have something else going into areas and then going to resources and then to archive, it becomes less and less actionable. Yeah.
Okay.
So that just as a general structure.
Okay. I'm going to ask you this last question and then you
can go ahead
and continue with your explanation. So the resources, you said it was sort of like a wiki. Is all that information that goes there, is it external information or is it information written in your own words? Is it your own information that you from other sources?
That's a good question. I would say things and resources, is more so based or almost always based on external information. Things I might have put into my own words, but things that are usually, again, some things I learned about something I didn't know anything about before I learned about that thing. So as you can see, all of the things that I create, sort of my original pieces of work, will probably almost either be in areas or it will be in projects. So that's actually a good way to think about it. I don't think I put all that many original pieces of content or anything into these resources blocks. Because again, for me, it's my personal wiki. So as you know, I'm starting my own business. And as part of that, I needed to get familiar with a ton of bureaucratic BS, if I'm being honest. So I'm not trying to talk shit about the German authorities or anything, but there were, of course, topics I needed to learn something about. Could be things like, how do I do taxes? Or what kind of taxes do I need to pay as a business owner of my business size and category? Or for example, the different business categories, there are business legal forms that you can start a business in. And so I wanted to get an overview over that. And that's something I needed to learn something about. And then those are pieces of information where I created a note, listed, for example, all of the different legal forms for businesses, and then put it into the corresponding folder, in this case, my entrepreneurship folder. So if I go in here, it's a lot of information. For example, here, the four components of an NDA, right? A non-disclosure agreement. So that's something I knew I needed for a certain use case, but I didn't know what needed to be in such an NDA. And so that's something I just looked up online, tried to get an overview over, watched a couple of YouTube videos, and then created the simple thing, but it's a piece of resource. It's not my original content.
Okay, but it is in your own words because you took notes on that, but you made them your own notes. So
yes, okay. But often as part of these ones, and I try to do that in general, if something's based on a piece of external information, I usually always put the link in it. So in this way, Quelle just means source. So I just put the link here and then it's very clear where that piece of information came from. And it's also useful if I remember, oh, I need to do another NDA, but I think I wrote something about this down. I can just go back in here. And if my own words are insufficient, I can just click the link and see where I originally got that piece of information from.
Okay.
So that's how I think about resources. And as you can see, this is something that's just developed. So I have certain areas that interest me. Entrepreneurship is probably one of the biggest folders here. Health is one, music, system optimization, but this could really be anything, right? So this, for example, is a very specific interest of mine. PSA stands for privacy, security, anonymity, and it relates to digital privacy, security, and anonymity, which is a super specific topic that I'm personally interested in. You're also interested in that, but someone else might not have that folder.
Yeah, okay, that's true.
Okay, but that's basically the resource part, and I think that really covers it. And maybe we can just tick off the last box, which is archive. And here I really put in past projects. So for example, I was thinking about getting a tattoo some time ago, and I created a project for that where I just wrote down, okay, what kind of logo did I want? Why did I want that? I really wanted to think it through properly. So I created a project. This was originally in the projects folder, but now because it's a past thing, and I didn't get the tattoo, just to clarify. Now it's in the archive thing and it's completed. Also things I often, if I write proper messages, I'm the kind of person, maybe that's my German DNA. I like to write proper messages on WhatsApp or whatever. So if I put a lot of time into writing a long message, I will often draft that in Obsidian first. And then I'll put it directly into archive because I know it'll be sent out straight away. And I probably won't be, you know, using that anytime soon again. But because I just want to capture it, I just put it straight into the archive. So there are certain notes which will skip the entire process, which will be created and go straight into archive. But this is how, you know, this works. And as you can see, Casual Depth, the name of our blog, is also an archive. But because this was
why
specifically...
Why is it an archive?
this was specifically the first attempt we made at creating a podcast version of our blog. Mm. And of course, we're starting a new version of that now. But this first attempt, we had, at a certain point, we canceled that. So that went straight into archive again.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow, I can see that you're very, not up to date, but I can see that you use it a lot for everything. So if you want to write a text message, you open Obsidian and then you save it somewhere. That's how it should be. But that doesn't happen to me. I use it for a lot of things, but I don't fully rely on it. And I guess that's because I haven't found the system I totally trust, which is why I kind of want to explore other things. But yeah, it's really fun to see how you actually use it. So continue.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So as you can see, I really do try to do it. Sometimes when I create a new project in my life, which happens on a weekly basis, right? I always have like new things I'm working on or different things going on. I don't always create projects immediately. Often it will be in retro perspective that I just create a bunch of notes related to the same thing I'm working on. And then every now and then I really clean up my Obsidian and then I'll put certain notes together, put them in a folder, consider project, and then it might go straight into the archive again. So I'm not always super consistent with it, but I think it's also fine. And in Obsidian, because I, you know, primarily rely on the search function for files. So I don't know which command you set up, but you can just like search for files by their names. And this is the thing I use as the primary orientation. So to be honest, this entire folder structure on the side, the purpose of it is not for me to use it and go through it and click on notes. The purpose is just to structure the things I've already done or created in some kind of useful way so that in the future it's easier to reconnect the dots. Yeah. Okay, but so much about the archive section. And we've covered the resource section. And maybe I can now, you know, focus on the area section again. And here again, this is just for general areas, which where I know I will continue to create things for each of those folders, but there's no end of it. It's an infinite game in that sense. For example, I have one folder that is called Film Impressions. To be honest, maybe it should be called Movie Impressions. I'm not quite sure why I call it film. I also don't know the difference. Do you know if there's one word?
There's no difference. I think one is American English and the other one is British English.
Okay, which one do you think is British?
I don't know. I have no idea. I know. I don't know. I think film, movie. I think film is British English. I don't know. I don't want to say it. And
I'm also not quite sure. I think I called it film because we actually call it film in German too. But yeah. But this is a good example of an areas folder for me because I really like to capture notes on movies that I watched, which captured my attention, or which I just want to, if I invest the time sitting down for 2 hours, 3 hours often nowadays to sit a movie, and I actually enjoyed that movie and it sort of captured my attention, then I do want to invest at least a couple of minutes to capture some thoughts or insights from that movie. So again, this is a good example of just like something I create. And if I go into it, you can see, okay, this is actually quite a big one. This is a movie which really captured my attention. This one's called Das Parfüm. It's a really famous book and movie. I'm not quite sure what it's called in English. Probably also just like perfume. But again, I have a certain template for this. So that's a cool thing about Obsidian. You can create very simple templates. So in my archive folder, I have a folder that is called templates. Templates right here. And in here, I have a couple of templates for specific things. So for example, I have one template, which is called film impression template. And as you can see, it's a pretty simple template, but it's just useful because if I watch the movie, I can just create a new note, call it FI, which stands for film impression, the name of the movie. And then I just use this template and I can quickly capture some thoughts and ideas about this template or the movie that I watched. So this is something I use. And again, just to give an example, film impressions, I will continue watching movies throughout my life and I will continue adding something here. So this folder never becomes old or outdated. So this is why it's not a project, it's an area.
Okay.
Yes. And then we have, for example, another good example, which is the journaling folder. I will continue writing journals. Maybe there will be a certain time where I won't write journals, where I might, you know, have a gap or something where I'm not writing any journals. But still, the goal is for me to continue adding to this. And as you can see, that's quite a lot of journal entries.
Wow. Do you journal every day?
Recently, I've become really consistent with journaling again. Just because I found an easy thing to connect my journaling habit to. And that is just journaling the first 5 minutes of my U-Bahn ride going to uni. It's a simple concept, habit stacking from, what's his name again? James Clear.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and habit stacking is a super powerful tool. But in my case, I often struggled to journal in the past because I didn't have anything to connect it to. But the U-Bahn ride for me is a perfect thing I can stack this habit of journaling onto because I'm doing it almost every day, taking the U-Bahn. And so I can just connect it with the journaling and it's been working really well. Yeah.
Sorry, what is the U-Bahn?
The bus? U-Bahn is the underground, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. So this is an example, but then also our casual depth folder, right? So casual depth as the entire project is something that is not time bound, right? We don't have any plans to cancel or finish or complete this project. We might have projects within this general area, right? I might still create a project for editing this specific podcast episode. That would probably be a project. But I do also want to have a folder where I can just add ideas or thoughts I have about casual depth. And I can capture it in this place that stays the same over time. Yeah. Okay, let me close this journaling folder.
For example, casual depth. You have it in your areas and then you want to do a project on it. Do you create a casual depth folder in projects? Do you move? Because I think Tiago Forte, maybe, I think he moved notes from one place to another. I'm not sure. I don't remember because I saw his workflow video last year, I think it was. Do you move folders or do they stay there and do you just create new notes and link them to maybe the casual depth notes in your areas, or how does that work for you?
Okay, so there will be certain folders that move. And those will specifically be project folders, right? Projects will be created in the project folder. Or I will create a new folder from new notes in the inbox, right? Where I was lazy, where I didn't immediately create a project folder. I might take a couple of these notes, create a new project, and then I will move it either to projects if it's still current and ongoing, or I might move it directly to the archive if it's already been completed, right? These folders in the area section or the resources section, they are pretty fixed. I might add new folders and I might delete a folder if there's one area, for example, that just leaves my life, which is pretty unlikely, but it might be the case. Then I might delete those folders I wouldn't delete them. I would, of course, move them to the archive. But so the only folders that really move are the ones in projects or folders that I create from the inbox. And yeah, that's sort of like the general structure.
Okay, but then do notes from, like, how do you use resources for a project, for example? Do you link? So if, for example, the automated desk thing that you have there, let's say you have resources on something related to that. Do you look for those notes manually and see if something relates and just write it down? Or do you link some of those resources to that project note so you can expand on it and build it in a way? How does that work?
Well, that's a really good question, actually. because you're essentially asking, if I create a new project, and of course I want to use my system, right? I might have some other notes that I created way back, which relate to this new project. Do I take these notes, which I created way back, and move them into this project folder, which is the current thing I'm working on? And the simple answer is no, I wouldn't do that because it's also tedious work. I don't want to do that. But that's exactly the power of Obsidian. I do not need to move those files from the archive, for example, or from resources to this new project folder. I can just link the files within the new things I'm creating. So if I create a new project in a folder and the first node in that, and I remember something that I created way back, I wouldn't move the file, but I would just link to that file. And that's totally sufficient for me. Because, and it's quite frankly a beautiful thing, I think, because it allows me to just not have to deal with this burden of, you know, restructuring or folders or moving files. This linking files is really powerful. And there's one thing I want to go into, which is something I've started to do more and more, which addresses exactly this problem. So in my case, for example, let's go to a specific file. Let's go to my sorry, I can't really type properly. Okay, so this right here, if it opens, this is a good example. So this is a note I created on an exam I had at TUM University. So the course is called Foundations of Entrepreneurship. It's the first semester, which is why it's called S1, and it's the first exam of that semester, and it's related to TUM University, so that's why I have it here. And this is what I would call a map of contents. And this is something that works specifically really well in Obsidian. And as you can see on the side here, just to address that real quick, in Obsidian, you have this graph view that you can pull up for the entire workspace. Let me just quickly open that. And my computer's already starting to bug because it's a lot of files.
Wow, you do have a lot of files.
Yeah, but as you can see, it's quite a big structure. And this is nice to look at if you want to give yourself a pat on the shoulder or something. But it's not useful at all. It doesn't have any, I can't see anything in here. Yes, I can use some filters here to trim this down to something useful. But that's also work again, so why would I do that? The thing I use the graph view for is not for this general graph view, but I can also use this one. Oh, let me go back to the same. Okay. So I use the graph view specifically as the sidebar thing, and you can configure it. It's pretty simple. You just go on the side and then you add the graph view. But this is the graph view for this specific node. And as you can see, this specific node is the purple dot here, and it's connected to a lot of other nodes. Some of them are created, which are these gray ones, and some of them are these darker gray ones, and those aren't created yet, right? But this is the map of contents. So one central node I created for one exam, and this links to pretty much all related nodes that were relevant for this exam. I like to create separate nodes. So, I mean, obviously you could have just said, okay, I have an exam coming up. These are the topics. Let's just put all of the contents into this one file. And you could do that. And you could, of course, still search for the contents of the file to find this file if you, for example, just remember a specific term. So if I remembered entrepreneurial personality, I could just, you know, search for that word in any note and I might find this again. But I actually prefer to create separate notes. So to create a separate note like this and then open it and put the contents for that specific topic in there. And this is then just like the map of contents. So this really just functions as the overview and the one node that connects all of the other nodes which relate together. And this, just to get back to your original question, this solves the problem of having to decide if one node should stay in resources or should be moved to the project folder, because it can just be both. it can stay in the resources folder because it's a resource, but it can still be connected to notes in the project folder.
Okay. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I mean, yeah, that makes sense because that's what I do. I don't follow the pair system. I did try to, but then I felt like I wasn't getting the most out of it. I might go back to it. I still need to think about it all. But what I stumbled upon was this linking your thinking system by Nick Milo. I don't know if you've heard about him. Well, he did an interview with Tiago Forte recently, I think. So what he does, he doesn't have folders. He has maps of content, which are called MOCs. Well, he calls them MOCs. And for him, those are like his folders. So what I do, I have this, instead of having, maybe that could be inside areas, but I have a health MOC with a data view. So that links to, if it has the link or the tag, my tags are links, that just appears there. So for me, that those are like my folders, but because the links, I can have three folders with the same notes inside them because they're links. So that's why I was wondering. But that makes total sense because your structure, you have it organized, but at the same time, it gives you the flexibility to use those notes in other notes by linking. But you still have that structure, which I feel I need, that I don't have in linking your thinking, because I do like folders. My brain is structured like that, and I like having that system like that, but then it gives you so much space because of links to build all of that. So yeah, that's why.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I mean, if someone is fine with just having a long list of notes with no substructure or anything like that, and fine with just using MOCs, so maps of contents, to structure their notes, then of course that's great. And if it works for them, go ahead. For me, that would make me so anxious. What's the word for it? If you're overly tidy, or if you have the compulsive need to be like really structured.
I don't know. Are you talking about the
compulsive disease? Yeah.
OCD,
what is it called? Yeah, OCD. Yeah.
Yeah.
Obsessive compulsory disorder or something.
Yeah, I think
I'm not quite sure. I might be wrong. But anyway, just as a joke. But I really enjoy having some kind of structure. And for me, I really just tried. I like the Pair system because it's a very simple structure. It is complicated to understand at first, but in principle, I only have four folders. And that to me is just amazing. And it's four folders which are able to handle anything. So now, no matter what kind of new interests I gain in the future, no matter how many, if I have a ton of projects in the future, or if I only have two projects, if I'm a really busy person, if I'm an academic, if I'm an entrepreneur, whatever it is, this system will be able to handle it. And it will just be extended within those four subcategories. But the system in itself is, functional for the long term. And so I do like this system. Yes.
Yeah.
And again, the combination of both linking and folders to me is a good approach.
Yeah, it is. I do recommend you to watch some of Nick Milo's videos just so you see what he does, because his system is too complex because he doesn't have external structure, but there's an internal structure. It's huge. Yes. Atlas, mocks, like MOCs, scaffolding sources. I don't even know what they are, what they mean, but it's so powerful. And I'm sure you can take some things out of it that could help you use links even more powerfully. I don't know.
That's I think that's a word.
Just so you can see what else you can do within your system.
Yes. I believe I might have actually seen it. The term map of contents, I believe I did actually get it from him. But yeah, it's a really nice tool and it just works well in Obsidian. And it also feels very satisfying to have a topic, for example, an exam is a really good example. You have a given list of topics you need to learn about and need to understand, and you can create this map of contents very easily. You just go into your, I don't know, in the first PowerPoint slide of the lecture where it's a list of all of the contents, you just put a simple list here and then you create new notes for each of those topics, and you don't even have to create them yet, but you already have that overview. And for me, it's also really good for understanding. For example, with exams, I want to understand what is the entirety of the stuff that I need to know. Yes, of course, in the exam, I need to know the specific bits of information, but I also want to understand how everything comes together, and maps of contents really help with that.
Yeah, you have a full overview. Yeah, that's
what I said. So, yes, sorry. Content overview. Okay. There's one last thing, and that's something that's just a cool thing to use in Obsidian, and that's the daily note. Mm. And that also has a specific function for me. So this daily note gets created automatically every time I open Obsidian. So basically, because I open Obsidian almost every day, I have a daily note for pretty much every day. Some of them might actually be empty if I don't add anything here. So they won't have anything else than this. But nowadays, with this journaling habit, I pretty much always add something here. So here, I just call it morning pages because I write my journal in the morning on my way to uni. So it's pretty open-ended. There's no specific prompts. I'm trying to keep my journaling simple nowadays. So this is just Dear Journal, and then I can just start typing away while I'm on the underground system here in Munich. And then the one useful thing, which I do actually have here, I have it at the bottom, so I don't even see it when I'm on my phone. But this is a database view, I'm not quite sure what it's called. But here we just have a simple data view function. And this just makes sure that whatever other notes I create in the same day, whatever other notes I edit in the same day, they all get linked to this daily note. And this just avoids having these so-called, what are they called again? The author notes, I believe.
Yeah.
So the notes that have no connection. And I think this is pretty useful because I might journal about something completely unrelated to the notes I created today. And this just makes sure that everything has some kind of connection. And that just, again, makes it easier for me to reconnect things when they come up in the future.
Yeah, I feel like daily notes are very powerful. I use daily notes, but because I don't go into Obsidian that much, it's a bit, I'd still need to figure out a structure for my daily notes. Not a structure, but a use for them, because the only thing I kind of use them for is, I think I told you about this shortcut I have on my phone. I have this shortcut on my phone, which I just press a button and I write anything. That's like my quick capture, and that goes into my daily notes. So most of my daily notes.
Oh, that's nice.
Just, I have it. It's really cool. I have to show you. And then I tag them if they're ideas or just, and if they have no tags, then it's just normal rambling. But because it's a daily note, it has the freedom to be anything I want. And if I just want to capture it, and it can stay there. But if it has a tag, it appears in another data view, so I can process that. But it's always linked to my daily notes, so that is quite cool to avoid those orphan notes and to know when that inspiration came or things like that. Yeah.
And again, I think just to stress this, because we haven't explicitly said it yet, this entire thing becomes more valuable over time and over long periods of time, right? When I initially started this, the first time I downloaded Obsidian, of course, I didn't have many notes in there. And I imported some from my previous Notion database, so I had some notes. But obviously, this is growing over time. And it might look like I have a ton of notes here, and I'm writing like a million words every day. But that's really not the case. I jot down a couple of sentences on my way to uni in the morning. And then while I'm studying and there's something I know I might need to remember in the future, I might create a new note, you know, and put some sentences in there. But it's really not this heavy lifting that it might seem like. It's not that much work. It's really just small bits all the time. And that creates this big thing, which might look a bit daunting at first. Okay. Yeah. The last thing I want to say, go ahead, please.
Sorry. No. Just finish. Yeah. I mean, okay. Continue. You, that sounded really aggressive.
The last thing I want to mention is that, again, just to clarify, this Obsidian Vault is just one of the end blocks of my entire system, which again consists of these three phases: information coming in, information being processed, information arriving at their final destinations. This is one part. The other one, which is also the second biggest endpoint, is of course my file system on my computer. In this case, I'm a Mac user, so in my case, it's Finder, and all of those files are synced with iCloud. But this is the second big database, essentially, for files. Because yes, you can actually put files into your Obsidian Vault. And I was actually thinking in the past if I should maybe move all of my files into my Obsidian Vault, so it's everything in one thing. But to be honest, like, the PDF viewer in Obsidian is not that great, so I do keep them separate. But I'm not going to show all of that, but just to clarify, I have the same system, this 1234 power system. I have it everywhere. So it's the same in Obsidian. It's the same in Finder. It's the same in my Things app, which is where I store my tasks. And this just makes it also easier to move across different pieces of software because it's the same underlying system.
Well, okay. I really appreciate it, you showing me. I would like a part two where I show you some of my things, because I do want to talk to you about things that I use, but also about, you've shown me the structure, but I'd like to know the workflow, kind of a specific example of how you use Things 3 and then how you process that through Readwise, maybe. Well, no, that's for books, but you know what I mean. The whole process, that I think that'd be very interesting on how you would use it on a normal day, I guess. So, yeah, for now, I think this was fine, but I do want a further a further explanation. But yeah, thank you, Aaron. It was very interesting to see. And I think you, if this works for you, it's so great, because it's simple, but I can definitely see how useful it is. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it was fun showing you around. I know it's kind of annoying because, again, we only touched on one piece of software, which is very important to the second brain. But again, it's only one piece of this bigger picture, which, to be honest, I'm just realizing now that it's still been a fairly limited view on how this entire system actually works. But yeah, maybe we can do a part two. And again, I'd also be super interested in seeing your system. And yeah, I'm sure we're both going to evolve our systems over time. But I think, I really do believe it makes us so much more powerful and skillful in the world, and will really benefit us in the future. So I encourage everyone who is intrigued by this idea to just try it out and get the journey started.
Yeah, definitely. It's a superhuman tool. So, yes. Yeah.
Great.
Well, thank you so much, Arna, and I hope you have a great week. So, yeah, see you next week.